another edition of Warrior Connection, ladies and gentlemen. Respect is what every veteran in our nation and in all the veterans around the world will get from the Progressive Radio Network and the incredible work of Dr. Gary Null. If you didn't hear last week's program, please go onto the website, prn.fm, under Warrior Connection. You can pull up his commentary and read his incredible, incredible report on the Gulf War illness and what has happened to the veterans of our nation.
Doug?
It's an incredible report, incredible story, and there's two parts to it. Well, today Ray and I are going to continue our conversation, and what we want to begin with is go back to the Choice Program. If you can go back into the archives, you will find out that Mr. Bradley Kiefer of the Choice U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs Health Net Choice Program was on our radio show a little over 2 months ago, and he promised the world. In other words, if the VA could not provide medical care, individual veterans could apply through the Choice Program and get to a provider of their choice and get the medical care that they needed promptly. Little did I know that within weeks of that program back in the middle of January, I myself would need to apply to the Choice Program to get pain management medical care because a pain management doctor I had at the Danville, Indiana VA Medical Center had been arrested and hauled out of the VA and handcuffed by the United States Marshals, ending all of my medical care. That was over a year ago. In all attempts to get pain management medical care for myself personally at Danville VA Medical Center have met with a total failure. So what I did back in January is I contacted, after talking to the director's office at Danville, Indiana VA Medical Center, I called the Choice Program. I had the card, and they were answered the phone and rapidly identified a provider in the system, Dr. King, at the Christie Clinic in Champaign, Illinois, which is about 15 miles from here. And even better, they got all my records. That's where my private my family doctor is. So it couldn't get any better. And it remains broken. It has been 2 months where I have been unable to obtain proper medical care for pain management for myself. And as Ray and all the other veterans know, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, and all of you know, pain management is a nightmare. And with the weather changes, it gets to be incredibly bad. And with the stresses, incredible stresses that happen on any anniversary, anything, there's something that happens, it all gets out of hand. Ray, I mean, what do we need to do when a veteran and myself or either one of us can't get proper care from the Department of Veteran Affairs or programs put in place? What alternatives do you think we have?
You know, sadly, Doug, one of the alternatives that people generally go to is the path of least resistance, which is a lot of times it'll be self-medication. You're trying to, because you have real pain, and even the VA, you know, has declared that you do have pain. I have a degenerative bone disease in my ankles and my knees from years of martial arts on concrete and running on the highway, and now I suffer from it, and a lot of it came, you know, from the military. But it's still, life grows, and the pain does too. And when a guy gets on medication and he begins to find relief and help, he starts living pretty much a normal life. When he can't get that, I tell you, it puts you into another world, and a lot of people will resort back to the whatever they can get hold of, which is a dangerous thing, and you don't really want to do that. I know that myself. When they would put me on so many pills like a day, say 4 pills a day, I would go and squirrel away. I would say, okay, I can maybe get by 3, so I'd put 1 away. And I know they say don't do this, but I'm telling you, when you can't get them, Doug, like you and I both have been held up in the last few days of not being able to get those pain medications, Tramadol, or they had me on morphine for a long time, and I got off of that. But when you go without that, I'm telling you, your body craves it because you get real pain, and you have to come up with your own little ways of dealing with it because nobody's going to help you. You can't get through past the door. You know, the people, what they call them, where they stand in your way, you know, door watchers or whatever they call them. And it's a very difficult thing. You keep hitting these locked doors. What do you do? What do you do?
Well, we know what has happened, and again, we lost the co-host of this radio show, Paul Lyons, almost 1 year ago exactly.
Yeah.
When he reached the point of no return, he couldn't get the proper care he needed. He couldn't get his pain management taken care of. He had suffered retaliation over and over again. The people that he trusted, and he asked all the way to include Colonel John Gingrich and General Eric Shinseki, who are now gone, and other individuals, totally failed him.
Yeah,
I mean, for me, it's absolutely totally unacceptable. And because of this, again, trying to get everything taken care of and getting asking for help,
right?
You know, in continuous failure. One thing in the conversation I had with the Choice Program person again a few minutes ago, I was off doing something and came back, and the phone message was on the answer machine. Call the Choice Program about your medical care. An appointment. I'm going, wow, I want to get a care. So I called up the Choice Program. This is less than an hour ago. We're pre-recording this on Wednesday afternoon. And they said it's a total failure again. The Danville, Ileana VA Medical Center, the records section, Miss Angela Montgomery, by name, has refused to provide the information that HealthNet needs to set up my appointment at Christie Clinic with Dr. King. And it's just all broken. And then the other thing, too, is they're running into a problem with the providers. None of these, and this includes both Carle Clinic in Champaign in Urbana and Christie Clinic in Champaign, Urbana, and all the other ones, they don't want anything to do with the VA or
right.
anything to do with the Choice Program because they can't get paid.
Exactly. I was relating to you about a situation I had, and I'd gone to the VA. My wife asked me to go because I was losing so much energy, and so I asked them to take my blood while I was there, and they really didn't want to do it. They said, nothing wrong with you. And I said, well, check it out. What are you? And I was real pale. Well, they called me when I was on my way home and said, come back. We want to check it. I guess someone saw that I was pale and weak. So I went back, and they took my blood, and I was waiting for them to hear from them. I didn't hear from them for 2 weeks. And then I was out working on my house trying to sell it because I couldn't take care of it anymore. And I fell and broke both of my arms and four ribs and the side of my head. I hit a stepping stone. And so I was in the hospital for 4 days, and when I got out of there, actually what my problem started, too, was when I was leaving, Doug, and people need to understand this with this Choice Care thing. We were leaving. They were discharging me out of the hospital, sending me back home. A young lady comes in there that did not work for the VA. She just worked at the hospital. She said, I got a paper for you to sign. And I said, well, I can't sign it, so my wife signed it. And what she said was, or asked, she said, do you want to be transferred from here to the Veterans Hospital? I said, well, no, I'm being discharged. I'm going home. She said, I was being discharged right now. And she said, well, you have to sign this if you don't want to be transferred to a VA hospital. And my wife said, he's on his way home. And so she signed it. Well, the VA came back and said, oh, well, you signed it, so we don't pay that. And it took a year to get them to pay, and I lost a lot of credit. My wife and I work hard to keep our credit up, but it goes against your credit score and things that you might want to use in the rest of your life. And because the doctors are not being paid, and they want to get paid, and they will turn you into a collection agency or somewhere. And so they're trying to get their money. But I had to prove to those people that I was being discharged and on my way home when they asked me that question, because it's almost like no reasoning is even there. This is black and white, and you do it or you don't do it, and that's all we look at. But there is some reasoning sometimes, Doug, and these, a lot of people are going there thinking they've really been promised something. They're going to get it. But if they sign the wrong paper, they put you need to go from wherever you are, a doctor or a hospital, they tell you have to. You need to go to the nearest VA hospital and let them check you before you go home. It's a lot of trouble. It was about 150 miles from where I lived, with the hospital I was in. But if you don't do it, you don't have a leg to stand on.
It's
and
a
so
nightmare.
They need to understand that.
I mean, with me right now, with the nightmare that I've had in attempting to get pain management care, and you have to understand, at the same time, we both had problems with getting our medications where it was all approved by the physician,
right,
and they just didn't do the release, and that all happened to us last week. So both of us were supposed to have them in the mail on Thursday. When we didn't get them in the mail on Thursday, it was all it had been pre-approved, and we both called on Thursday to find out that it had never been done until after we called on Thursday, and for me it turned into a fast drive to Danville, which is 40 miles in an ice and snow and rain.
Wow.
Which is not nice when you're in pain and the weather's bad and you're sick.
Yeah,
and you can't feel good.
Here.
Right?
Go ahead.
Anyhow, as a consequence of the total failure of the VA Choice Program to provide me the essential services, I have a statement that has been provided by Bradley Kiefer of HelpNet, and he has asked us to read this because he senses the frustration. And since he had been on, you know, cited on Warrior Connection before, promising the moon, here is his exact quotation statement. Below is a HelpNet Federal Services statement. We hope you'll be able to read this entirely on your radio program. We regret that you have found our efforts on your behalf to be unsatisfactory. Developing a complex new program like Veterans Choice is a team effort, and HelpNet Federal Services, working closely with Congress, the Department of Veteran Affairs, healthcare providers, and many others to improve service levels and provide veterans with appropriate, coordinated, and convenient care they have earned for their service to our nation. The Choice Program recently completed its first year of operation, and we, as well as all stakeholders in the program, learned a great deal from this early experience about what it will take to cultivate an effective public-private partnership that efficiently connects community health care providers with veterans who are eligible for this program. There was good news last week when the VA announced it has eliminated administrative burdens placed on community health care providers. We expect that this will help us eliminate the current backlog of provider claims and help ensure timely payment of clean claims going forward. Supporting those who serve in the military is our DNA. Partnering with the Department of Defense since 1988, we are the nation's longest tenured contractor for TRICARE program, which serve active duty military personnel and their dependents. HelpNet proudly supports VA's vision for a single community care program that is easy to understand, simple to administer, and meets the needs of veterans, community health care providers, and VA staff. We will continue to work closely with the VA to help us make this a reality. Signed, Brad Kiefer. That's Brad, B-R-A-D, Kiefer, K-I-E-F-F-E-R, HelpNet Incorporated.
It sounds wonderful.
We're sorry, Doug, and it's busted, and when I talked to him an hour ago, it's still busted because the Danville VA is refusing to provide the information they need, but then they can't get a provider to go along because they're not paying them.
That's true. I mean, he said it was a complex system, and I think most complex systems always start out as a great idea. It's just when you get into it and the masses of people you're dealing with, it just gets out of control. And they're still trying to bring it back in control. And I think what they're doing is good. But right now, Doug, you're out of medication and you're hurting, and it's wintertime and your bones are hurting because of the cold, too. And there's some things that should take priority that should be taken care of immediately, because I mean, you've got to have help, and I got to have help when I need it.
You know, we have each other, but not everybody has somebody. I mean, when this all broke loose again, failure 2 weeks ago, and I called Brad Kiefer, he appointed a Jennifer Moore to solve the problem. And just like everybody, he had appointed somebody else first, and they didn't do it, and then he couldn't even find them. And then he appointed Jennifer Moore, and I had a conversation. She said, we're going to fix it, and then it all got dropped for two weeks. And then yesterday, again, it was all dropped. I called them again and asked them. I talked to a Deloy. He said, I'm going to get the stuff and we'll get it fixed for you. And everything got dropped. And last night, Brad Kiefer called me at home from after work, personally called me and said, it's busted, Doug. Sorry. I'm sending our statement and apology and what we need to do. And then when I talked to him an hour ago, it was very clear that Angela Montgomery at the Danville, Illiana VA Medical Center and simply refused or hadn't coordinated to send the information that the HelpNet needs to provide the provider to get me an appointment. So what we need to do, as far as all these individuals have been involved and failed to provide me care, obviously there are a lot more, because we've heard that over and over again. These individuals that have failed their jobs, such as Angela Montgomery and the other individuals that have failed along, should be terminated from employment with the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs or HelpNet in the Choice Program immediately. And they need to put people in there that have care or concern and will solve a problem when a problem arises. I mean, there's no doubt problems are going to arise. But when you run into a problem, you find the immediate solution and take care of it. We don't need any more people such as Paul and all the others we've heard that have chosen the final out. I mean, that comes to it when you're in incredible pain, you've been denied and delayed medical care, you can't get help or anything else. The first choice, as you said, is alcohol and other street drugs and everything. Well, I mean, you and I are not going to do that.
No.
You know, but way too many do.
But what people do, Doug, is a lot of times, you know, and what they probably can do, you go to Walmart, you talk to the pharmacist, you find something that will give you as much relief as you could possibly get, because it may be a few days before you ever get what you need, it or longer. And so you have to find alternatives. And you, if you do alcohol or drugs, there's always that possibility of you being caught getting it or doing it or something. And you're going to have a lot more problems because, you know, when you go to jail, they don't give you drugs in jail. So you've got to really fight doing the wrong thing. And you have to find, you know, viable resources to help you in these bad times. Maybe other people can help you. Pain management somehow, outside sources. I couldn't get the VA to check my blood, Doug. This was several months ago. But I had a doctor friend that told me, he said, I'll write it up. So he wrote it up. I went to another outside hospital, and I think he paid for it because I never got a bill. But that's how friends work sometimes. You have to look for resources. You have to look for people to help you out without getting into shady stuff that could cause you much more problems.
You know, we're seeing this because we got all the people that served across the nation that are retired or now discharged. And then you're seeing an incredible problem on the active duty, as we know. I mean, those guys have been prescribed all kinds of medications, psychotropic drugs and pain meds, and they're sharing them on the open market. And then they're using alcohol, has been absolutely reported, and we know the drug use is increasing, illegal drug use is all increasing. So it's a total catch-22, and the congressional staff members that we have asked for help, yeah, they'll take your information and then they pass it on to the congressional VA liaison and expect that liaison to ensure the problem is resolved. Well, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, God knows if it'll ever get resolved, but it just doesn't happen, yeah, because there is zero accountability, zero intent to provide all the information and acknowledge the health effects of all the complex toxic exposures and the injuries incurred in combat and the incredible toxic exposures spread across the nation, all these close military installations such as Chanute Air Force Base right here in Rantoul, Fort McClellan, Alabama, Anniston, Alabama, and we can go on and on and on.
Well, you know, Doug, if you look at the surface of things sometimes, if you listen to what the president tells us about the VA, if you listen to people in the VA, if you listen, they always paint a great picture, but it's hard to come downstream to where you're at. And if you listen to those running for president right now, you'll think America's really up on the upswing, but it's in free fall, really. I mean, if you're really honest with yourself and become a realist, you will understand. And I think you and I are realists because we've been through bad situations, and we're not easily fooled because we learn from some mistakes along the way. And if you understand that, it'll help you to make a better assessment of what you need to do rather than waiting on people just to show up, because they don't show up sometimes. And, you know, I tell these young people today, tomorrow I'm talking at Camp Lejeune to a bunch of Marines and sailors that are dealing with problems and they don't know how to get around it or get over it. So what I try to do, I try to give them a plan of how to, it comes down not to what the VA can do for me, but it's what can you do for you right this minute? Because they may not show up or they may delay it. So what are you going to do? And so you have to get a plan. They often say if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And I think as military, we've all had to do that at some point of our careers and all. We've had to take the ball and run with it, and because you're going to have to do it before it's over with anyway. I think part of survival is doing that, Doug.
You know, for me, 25 years has gone on, and we had an incredible program last week with Dr. Gary Knoll, the head of this network. I mean, God bless him. His work is incredible. If you haven't read the paper, go to the website and read the paper. Get his documentaries and watch them. They're staggering. He discussed them on the radio show. 25 years ago, almost to the day, we started the Clean Up the DU project. And for me, the moral and ethical injury is absolutely staggering. I want to read the documents that I was given that day when I started those, for in order for everybody to understand the stress factors involved in pain and the stress and denial of medical care. This first memorandum is from the Defense Nuclear Agency. It's written by Colonel Gregory Lyle. It's dated March 1st of 1991. The hostilities surrounding Operation Desert Storm raise a question concerning what can, must, or should be done with the millions of expended rounds of depleted uranium ordnance. This problem is caused by the use of unique munitions, for example, the Air Force Gowie 8 30mm AR burning incinerator, Army 120mm main gun tank rounds. Okay, there are other procedures for clearing destroyed and damaged vehicles and aircraft that have DE rounds. Both Air Force and Army TB specifically specify procedures that DE munitions must be collected by using protective measures, specifically packaged for shipment to Army depots or National Radiological Waste Burial Site. Since soil of the facilities and last of these intact rounds, the DU debris has been processed through special weapons units as contaminating material per DNA technical procedures. And this was in, end quote, and then this was in the technical bulletin 913 under 278 I was given. Continue on, direct quote. As explosive ordnance disposal, EOD, ground combat units, and civil populations in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Iraq come increasingly into contact with depleted uranium ordnance, we must prepare to deal with the potential problems. Toxic war souvenirs, political furor, and post-conflict cleanup, that's host nation agreement, are only some of the issues that must be addressed. Alpha particles, uranium oxide dust from expended rounds, is a health concern, but beta particles from fragments and intact rounds is a serious health threat with possible exposure rate of 200 millirads per hour on contact. The DOD appears to have excellent procedures in place for handling storage of DU materials, but specific DOD guidance concerning the disposition of materials in the post-combat period restoration place is currently lacking. Along with forceps and guidance and everything, conventional ammunition and everything, the communities and everything and all this stuff has got to get cleaned up. Well, at that time I was assigned, as you all know, and as we discussed here on this radio program and others and documents out there, I was assigned as a theater health physicist to the DU team, as a DU team medic, combat medic. I'm an old combat medic, and also as a health physicist to clean up the depleted uranium mess. I lost 16 Abrams tanks and 15 Bradley fighting vehicles to DU friendly fire during Operation Desert Storm. I lost 3 Abrams tanks to enemy fire and a bunch of Bradleys to enemy fire. At the same time that was given this thing, and this is where the pain management comes into incredible play with the stress and the moral injury, I was handed by a general, famous general, what's called the Los Alamos Memorandum. And this is Los Alamos Memorandum. It's Data Studies and Analysis Branch, and is written by Colonel Michael Zeem, is dated 1 March 1991. Subject, the effectiveness of depleted uranium penetrators. There is a relatively small amount of lethality data for uranium penetrators, either the tank-fired long version or the Gowie 8 round fired from the A-10 close air support aircraft. The recent war has likely multiplied the number of DU rounds fired at targets by orders of magnitude. It is believed that DU penetrators were very effective against Iraqi armor. However, assessments of such will have to be made. There has been and continues to be a concern regarding the impact of DU on the environment. Therefore, if no one makes a case for effectiveness of DU on the battlefield, DU rounds may become politically unacceptable and thus be deleted from the arsenal. If DU penetrators prove their worth during our recent combat activities, then we should assure their future existence until something better is developed through service and DOD proponency. If proponency is not garnered, it is possible that we stand to lose a valuable combat capability. I believe we should keep this sensitive issue in mind whenever after action reports are written. Respectfully, Colonel Z. The beginning of my moral injury, assigned by task by General Swartzkopf to clean up the DU mess, warned how hazardous it was, given the TB, which we provided, and it's on the website, about what needs to be done and how dangerous it is, and that was just the beginning, and then given an order to lie in all of my reports to avoid all liability. And what is happening for me personally, as I can't get medical care under the CHOICE program, I can't get medical care under the Airborne Hazards Registry program because the VA and the military are claiming that I never deployed and never did the work. That's what they've done to me. What have they done to all these other kids, Ray? What are they doing to all these other kids? How will these young kids that don't have any resources, that don't have any medical information, how will they survive?
It is a quagmire. I don't know if there's any way to explain what is going on and has gone on, and we're seeing a population today that almost seem intoxicated or under a spell because they're, and one of the things is, so many veterans especially, but they're under a lot of medications. They're under, a lot of mind-altering drugs, and we've been on there too, so we don't understand what we're talking about. But also the civilians, they have like 3 and 4 year old children. They put them on Ritalin. They put them on different things. And we are being somewhat intoxicated through medication, through pharmaceuticals. And they saw it coming many years ago, but we never thought we'd be to the point that it seems. A couple little problems that I've come to realize, too, Doug, is that last night I was, I sent you an email about what I thought, why so many people were messed up on mental, having mental emotional problems. And it comes through the society we're growing up in today, where a lot of bad things are happening. People are going through divorces. People are changing lifestyles, all these things. And the children being raised in that dysfunction are being affected by it. And they're having their emotions and things, they're having to deal with things they should never have to deal with. And does it have a long-term effect? Well, it does have a long-term effect. And moral injury is something that never seems to go away, Doug, and you understand that completely. I understand it. But how do we deal with these things? I watch the television. I know people. I talked to a guy the other day. This is a good guy. He's always in church and everything. But he got mad, and he started talking about Muslim people, and he started saying, I want to kill everybody. I want to kill. I want to kill. I want to kill. And he was so angry and so hostile. I said, man, you got to back away because you're getting hard as a rock. And he said, I want to be. Well, let me tell you what happened, Doug, with this. He sits in front of the television a lot of times, and he listens to hate mongers. Now, I love conservatism. I am a conservative. I have Christian principles that I live by. But a lot of these people will come in there. There was a guy, a French philosopher, and you're very well, you know this guy, but his name was Alexis Tocqueville. And he came to the United States in the 1800s, and he wanted to see what the magic quality enabled the handful of people in America to even beat off the British Empire twice in 35 years. And so he went around the country. He looked at the greatness of America and our harbors and our rivers and fertile fields and boundless forests and mines and other natural resources. And then he began to study American schools and the Congress and the matchless Constitution without ever comprehending what America's real power was. And he said he didn't until he visited the churches of America and heard the pulpits aflame with righteousness, righteous preaching. And one determination of what righteousness is, or definition, it would be rightness of life. And he didn't understand the power of America until he heard that. And he said, I found out what it is. That is a genius, and her genius and strength. And he went back to America and went back to France and he wrote, America is great because America is good. And if America ever ceases to be good, America will cease to be great. I think we're in decline today, and I think a lot of it came from the pulpit that we listen to all the time. And that's the television, that is social media, that is the Internet, where people are spewing out leaders in America. I love conservatism, but I listen to Beck. I don't listen to Beck, really, but I've heard Beck. I've heard Limbaugh. I've heard Trump. All these people are spewing out bitterness, and they're trying to make America great, but until America becomes good again, they're not going to be great. And so we're dealing with something that God has given a solution to this stuff, but we don't want it. It's like a medicine. I do not know the solution to it other than there's a verse in 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 14, and it says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves, they will pray, they will seek my face, and they'll turn from their wicked ways, and in other words, quit doing it. He said, then I'll hear from heaven. I'll forgive their sins, and I'll heal their land. Doug, I don't know of another thing that's going to fix this problem because it's so massive, and it covers so many areas of life, and we'll lose it. What is the next generation going to look like, Doug? They've been wounded. They've been beaten up. They've been sent to war. They brought back. They can't get any help. The population that hasn't gone to war have been raised in a war zone back here in the country. What is the next generation of Americans going to look like if they don't get some kind of true help?
And well, we know what's
going to come from God.
We know what happened to the Vietnam veteran. All of us are Vietnam veterans, and those that continued on. I mean, the Agent Orange catastrophe, I mean, deny, oh, yes, and then limited care, and they're still fighting for care, as we all know. Vietnam vets are still fighting for care. But the Vietnam vet, just like the Desert Storm now, can't get the proper medical care that they earned in service to our nation. And then they have to deal with the ethics and the morality of the war and what was happening, the fact that we were lied to about all the stuff. We can't change that.
Right.
That is so deep into the soul. And then when the individual is in dire need of medical care, they can't get the medical care, and the stress and the strain, and it's like what happened now. I mean, yesterday they just deliberately and willfully bombed a camp and killed, I don't know, 150 people in Somalia. I mean, how are Somalia guys that don't even have a horse to get to the next, or a camel, to ride 5 miles going to get to the U.S. is beyond me. But, you know, it's a standard of, you know, we're going to sit there and destroy and act first before they come to us, and yet they have no threat. But it still comes down to what do we do for the veterans of our nation to provide them the medical care that they have earned in service to our nation, whether it be wartime and peacetime, whether it be those that are from World War II in the end. I was with one yesterday when we met with Congress Shimkus, who was a World War II Army vet that fought on Guadalcanal.
Wow.
A real American hero.
Yeah. Well, you know, Doug, it used to be you could bomb a hospital in Somalia somewhere and kill 150 people, and nobody knew about it. Today, through the mass media, that happens, and they can't do anything about themselves, but the rest of the world watches. And the terrorists and everybody, all it does is throw fuel on the fire to hate America. We make mistakes, but some mistakes, just like you're talking about the Gulf War, they were made. Well, that's a mistake. Okay, it's a mistake. The wind was blowing back on you folks, and your lives are messed up because of it. Well, fix it. You can't do anything about the mistake, but you can go back and fix this thing. You can give proper treatment to these people and give them their dignity back and quit abandoning those people. That's what you can do.
And we have to clean up the environment. I had another call from a scientist, a doctor, working on the health effects in the population in Kuwait also today. And that's a catastrophic mess in the Middle East with the non-combatant populations. But I remember with Madeleine Albright, and I'd have to find the quick citation and everything, quotation, but it was basically that collateral damage is acceptable. And the collateral damage, we mean the populations of these areas where we've gone into.
Wow.
That's wrong.
I don't understand that, I don't like being collateral damage. I don't like to be an acceptable losses. It makes me ill when I hear that with our people, with our government officials and such. They're talking about you, Doug. They're talking about your children. Acceptable losses. I think it's unacceptable.
You know, after Paul committed suicide a year ago, there were many of us that came up with ideas and solutions. I mean, Captain David Wynette, you know, spoke at in Washington specifically, incredible ideas, what Paul had been about, what it could do, and how they can fix it. And you and I and others, we worked down and came up with a bullet point list of problems that could be done to fix the Department of Veteran Affairs and the medical thing. And I think today, I mean, we're looking at the time, you know, one year from Paul's suicide, and what it is, quote, number one, all pertinent documents are fully distributed. 2, VA-DOD leaders must publicly admit the correlation between toxic exposures and adverse health effects as already known, and that's all over the Internet and every place else in their own documents. Continuing medical education must be made available and completed. So that's initiated, and I provided that, and Denise and all of us have provided that before. The numerous investigative documentaries must be made available and watched to begin to comprehend and resolve the problems. Gary Null talked about that, so he's done two on Gulf War illness. He's done another one on the homeless. He's done on the drug problem and everything else. And then we have Joyce Riley's, you know, Beyond Treason. Medical care must be optimized. Medical care must be prompt. Stop the overt and hidden retaliation. I mean, when you and I both found out last week that both of our meds were messed up, the only thing I'm coming, I mean, these guys can't be so incompetent. It's two separate VAs, thousands of miles apart, that they're going to screw it up the same day, the same way.
Yeah.
And then we find out Patricia Axelrod, another co-host that's worked on everything and was, you know, forced Brad Kiefer to come on to get a statement on the Choice program before, all of a sudden all her mail disappears. I mean, for me not being able to get in and claiming that I was never over there to prevent me from getting into the thing, I mean, that's retaliation. It's the same thing when the doctor came to the clinic appointment, doctor's appointment I had at the Warringer Clinic in Washington, D.C., and he actually came in and said that I was never in the Army and never deployed, and that should throw me out of the hospital in a doctor's appointment. Thorough environmental remediation to mitigate exposures must be completed. Adequate staffing to the hospitals and the clinics must be done. Coordinated medical care appointments, in other words, across all disciplines, totally interdisciplinary, from mental health to the PTSD clinic, and PTSD is not a mental condition. That's a moral injury. It's a dealing with the reality of war where the individual has no ability to deal with what they learned and what they found about themselves. Tell the truth about all these wars, the ethical, moral dimension. Report the actual casualty numbers, not the reduced numbers. We know from the hidden VA reports and everything that stopped, we have over 300,000 Desert Storm that have already applied to the VA for medical care, and we know it's 1.5 million for the OIF and OEF already. Crisis line follow-up through a referral that failed with Paul Lyons. If somebody calls a crisis line, they got to get referred to a doctor in proper care and treatment to alleviate the problems and the pain they're suffering, which leads them to suicide. Verified definitive treatment. Pardon, Ray?
That's why Johnny Brunda and some, and he's been on, he's been your guest too, but they created the Joint Veterans Crisis Response Team. Is because the VA was not doing the job, they created their own. And now they have out-of-state calls of people that are recommending them, law enforcement and such, in Ohio and Illinois, different places. And they're sending people to this little organization down in North Carolina who is actually helping these guys. They intervene. They do. They'll tell them, we have to bring the law enforcement sometimes because the guy is drinking or his gun has guns and stuff. But they actually try to get literal help to these people, things that will help them. And, you know, it's a shame that veterans have to go out and do some of this stuff. But they actually get in between the veteran and the problem and say, no, it ain't working. We're gonna fight this thing. So there are people out there like yourself and Johnny and hopefully me, but we're having to fight this on our own because they're not helping us.
You know, when a person calls a crisis line, they call them because they're in either a medical turmoil or they have an oral methyl oil problem, and that requires an immediate solution. It's not just, well, we'll talk to you and make you feel good. We have to find out what does that veteran need in order to resolve the problem that initiated the call for help.
It is.
You can't just say, well, I heard you, and I'll listen to you, and now I'll, you know, walk away.
Yeah. But it's when they get calls, and I've been on those calls before, and these are veterans on that hotline. These are veterans answering those suicide calls. And most of the time, it's a spouse that's calling or somebody close to the guy. He's locked in the bedroom. He's been drinking all day. He's got guns in there. He's got this, and he's quiet. I haven't heard him in an hour or two. And she's panicking, you know, and she's like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And we'll say, you know, okay, if I get some law enforcement involved. It's like, you know, so we call the law enforcement agency and we explain to them what is going on. This guy is a veteran. He's not crazy. He's not. He's depressed, or something's going on. But you have to give them a heads up so that when they get there, they won't just assume he's crazy and they'll go in and guns blazing. And it works out pretty much 99% of the time. It works to the positive for these guys. And we call back later, and the guy is laughing and talking. You know, some days later. And they're thanking us, please, thank you, please, please, just pass it on, because these guys are killing themselves. If somebody had been there for Paul, he might not have, you know, done what he did that night.
Well, and the police did respond, and the police did respond down there, and that turned into a sour mess.
Right.
Verify definitive treatment recovery plan. This is all the way for everything on medical care for all aspects. Crisis intervention team, as you said, you need a chaplain and a medic, a trained chaplain and a trained medic. I mean, law enforcement maybe, but you need somebody trained that has compassion and understands what to do and how to alleviate the problem. Because you get in a situation where a vet's in trouble and everything, and you send in law enforcement and everything, I mean, how many times have we had suicide by police?
Exactly, right.
Way too many. No SWAT team intervention unless, you know, a chaplain makes a call. I mean, that's beyond comprehension. Return all phone call requests for help before or at the end of the day, even only in contact. So if a veteran calls the VA for medical care or needs help or needs to get an appointment, you can't leave that guy hanging for 12, 24, 72, 96 hours, which all of us have had the problem happen to us over and over again. They don't return the phone calls.
No.
And, you know, and that means the other day when I was at the VA trying to get my drugs all straightened out and everything, 4 o'clock ran. They were going out the door before 4 o'clock, so they were at their cars at 4 o'clock. That is what I observed. It wasn't, we'll work till 4 o'clock. Oh, there's still a patient here. I'll need to be after until they're taken care of. They're up and packed out of there, so their history out the door and gone at the 4 o'clock buzzer.
That's true. Doug, when you're talking about a chaplain, and I'm a chaplain, and I get on some of these calls, is not to push anything, is not to convert them, is not to do, is trying to intervene. And what I've done before was I would call the city, and I would go, you know, through the Yellow Pages online things, and I would find a local pastor, and I would contact him, and I'd say, make a visit to these people and see what they need. Try to get in there. If they need food, get them some food. If they need clothes, get them some clothes. Do something to intervene. And Johnny works with other areas. And so the law enforcement is really like the last thing you want, but sometimes it has to go in because there's weapons involved in different things. And it's always turned out. I don't know if any of that's really went south on them, but because somebody cared enough to get involved in that deal.
You need a thorough support system and action plan. In other words, a veteran in need, they have to have a support system, they have to have an action plan. Not everybody has a support system. Not everybody is capable of communicating. Not everybody, when their mind is screwed up like this, they're in pain or in need of medical care, they don't necessarily think logically and they don't communicate logically. And then one thing we've all seen is with the veterans today and too many other, they don't have the academic education, understand the doctor's prescribing or the needs or what the doctor says, and they can't follow through. So, I mean, again, the same thing has to be completely there. How do we solve the problem? How do we discuss it? Coordinated family support and notification. We know that didn't happen with Paul Lyons. Denise Nichols had to take care of that herself. Thorough primary and secondary historical survey to determine casual relationships. You know, what is happening? This is the Department of Defense DD-2796 post-deployment physical assessment form. Get that totally distributed and completed. We know too many of them don't have it. We know that in this congressional GAO confirmation, those that were prepared disappeared. One day there was a fire. Remember the fire at St. Louis when all the records disappeared?
Yeah, that's right.
One day there was a fire. Coordinate with the best friend.
Right.
Everybody's got a best friend or somebody that you can coordinate with that that veteran will listen to or that family member will listen to.
Right.
And then don't give the referral back to the failed group. If somebody failed the veteran, don't refer them back to the veteran group that failed them.
Right. Yeah.
That's nothing but a time bomb.
Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes it doesn't seem to be an answer, but there are an answer. But it's going to come from people who are thinking straight. who are maybe looking at the situation from a different angle. And that's why we need each other. And I think, and you do too, but veterans should be the number one priority to their country to take care of these guys. These were the guys who sacrificed their lives, their time, their energy, their bodies, everything else, their minds, for the freedom so everybody else could do what they want to do. And they're the last ones sometimes to get the attention when they come back home. Or they get, you know, a lot of times that what I've seen is that there are, most of them, about 85 to 90% of veterans are on some type of medication. And many of these are psychotropic. And Dr. Billings, which is on your program, he would say, look, more help is not going to come through more medication. It's going to come from real answers, getting our heads straight, and be able to move forward in this. But as long as you're medicating people, they're not going to be able to think rationally. They're not going to be able to do their jobs like they should. They're not going to be able to have a home like they should. Their home is probably going to break up before it's over with through those medications. The over-prescribing, I think that's what the main thing is. But, Doug, it's not going to come through that. It's going to have to come through getting some heads together and standing up front and, you know, talking about the squeaky wheel shows up. Well, that squeaky wheel hurts your ears, but you've got to stand up sometimes and say, look, beat on me. I don't care. Beat on me. But you're going to have to start doing something. And sometimes it works. But you're doing a great thing. And you know, I mean, somebody's got to do it. And I know you get beat up a lot, Doug, but you're pretty tough. So I think you've made a great Marine.
You know, I think it's all put together for some odd reason. You know, we've got an incredible team of people that we work for. You know, the memory of Bowers Raiders. I mean, so many of them are gone, deceased now from their exposures and health effects. And then these young kids that you're dealing with at Camp Lejeune and we're dealing with all over the military, they come back and come home. So often, they might be healthy one moment, and the next thing, they're crashing and burning. And they had the hoo-ha factor, which is hard to describe if you're not in the military. But then all of a sudden, that hoo-ha factor crashes and burns because the moral injury comes to the forefront, whether it's in the conscious or the subconscious. And now that person, that veteran, is non-functional.
And yeah, then the conscious is... I'm sorry.
And then their med problem is complicated. Go ahead,
sorry.
Ray.
Go ahead. That's all right.
I was just going to say the
conscious is that small part. I know the conscious is a small part of you that feels bad when everything else feels good. It's the part you're left with when you're by yourself. And that little voice inside of you that says, oh, man, you're the man. You're the man, all right, but you shouldn't have done that. Well, Doug, you were forced to do things. And when you're forced to do things you know are wrong, it comes back and bites you when you're by yourself, and that's called moral injury. But there is solace in the fact that when you ask God to forgive you of something, you feel a ton lift off of you. Well, people still need to be held accountable for those things that did that. But for you, your own self, it gives you some peace of knowing that God's not going to hold this thing against me anymore. I feel bad about what happened, but some of the guilt is taken away. But you're still, you know, people that made that happen need to be called into, accountability. And so that's part of what you're doing today. So hope it helps.
You know, Gary after he went over his commentary and all of his findings from his research and his documentaries last week, he came up with the idea of a national day of awareness or a national day of call. I mean, this is bringing all the veterans or our nation together, whether they be or having their family members come together to highlight the problems of delayed, denied, ineffective medical care, the abandonment of the warrior, the abandonment of the warrior's family, and put it forefront, in the front of everything, because with these young kids, that's our future. And if they're busted and they can't be fixed or they're left to simmer until they explode,
exactly,
the future is dim. And at some point, we have to get up, because what I keep hearing, oh, it's not a problem. No, we don't have to worry about it. It doesn't concern me. And as you and I both know, what people can figure it out doesn't concern me until they crash and burn, or their family crashes and burns, and then they're beating our door down. And then when they find out they can't get the care, what do they do? Some of them result like Paul did and give it all hope up. I mean, the numbers that have given up hope is, what is it, somewhere 20 or 22 veterans are committing suicide per day?
Well, 22, but they also, the DOD says, they think they're losing 100 active duty and reservists. That's what the DOD said. They said, you won't read about that in the paper. But that was their estimate, and that's just unbelievable, Doug, to think that. But it is. These guys are coming back and actually don't want to live like this anymore. And they're hitting a lot of closed doors. They're being put on medication. They're drinking because they're young and dumb and all this other stuff like we did. But, you know, when you put a combination of all this stuff, they don't want to live like this the rest of their lives. And so, and they look at us, and we're still fighting for what we shouldn't have to fight for, Doug. And they're thinking, is this it? Is this all I want to be doing? Am I going to be fighting the rest of my life trying to receive care? They make me feel like I'm a second-class citizen. They make me feel like I'm begging for something. You know, there's some things you paid for. You're only getting the results now because you paid for it earlier. And they need to understand that that is not what it's about. It's about having a decent life and a good life. They gave their life for their country in not physically, but they did in a lot of other ways. You've never not been in the military, Doug, since you joined. You've always been in the military, myself the same way. And I will probably die an old Marine. You'll die an old Air Force person, and because you gave your life for your country a long time ago. And these young people need to understand there is life after trauma. You can have a good life because we proved that, Doug. All they have to do is follow us, and that's what I'm trying to do, and I think you're doing the same thing.
Well, you know, the individuals can come back and get out of the military and go on to education or training.
Yeah.
They have to have both academic education and vocational training. They make that choice, whatever their aptitude is, whatever their interests are, and go on to excel in a career field and make a difference, make a dent in their community. But, you know, when everything is broken like this, I mean, the divorce rate, again, what, in the military is astronomical. The divorce rate in the Vietnam veterans, as you said before, was astronomical.
They
Some of us were lucky.
90%, what
is it, Ray?
What they say.
Ray, how much is it?
90%. That's what they say of Gulf War. And I understand it's a little misleading because there are probably 20 or 30% that have had good marriages. But there's a big percentage that continually recycles. They continually divorce, remarry, and the kids are growing up in that time. I was telling you before, I know two guys been married 9 times, Doug, and maybe even more by now. But it's because they found out that, like, marriage is disposable when it gets to be bad and with drugs and alcohol and such. You just scrap it and go find you something better. But those kids are growing up in that, and they're being affected by that.
So the PTSD that we're seeing in the younger generation for the kids enrolling today are from the parents where they were all screwed up.
Yeah.
So they don't have the coping mechanisms, the background, or the information to when they get in the situation themselves. So now we got a synergistic condition where they're screwed up to begin with, and they're super screwed up when they get done.
It's really a mess. I mean, and, you know, when a child looks up at that and he thinks, this is life. This is what I have to look forward to. And that's why we have to get to them and get them to understand that the only difference between that kid and the people he admires are the choices they make. They can make better choices. They make better choices than your parents did. I talked to a bunch of kids 2 weeks ago, junior ROTC students at a high school, and I simply told them, I said, what is the difference? Do you understand the difference between survive and thrive? Survive is a guy who runs out of a burning building, and he survived it. Thriving is a guy that runs out, douses himself in water, and runs back in to get somebody else. Well, that's me and you. We have survived, but we're also thriving because we're going back in there, and we're trying to get in that world again. And Doug, it'd be a much easier life if you didn't have to do what you have to do, and it'd be easier on me if I didn't have to do what I have to do. But there's a lot of young people that are dependent on somebody going back in there and say, follow me, I'll lead you out of this thing. And so we're giving them a plan that I have tried to formulate for them to get them to understand that it's about choices. You make better choices, you get better results. You make poor choices, you get poor results. And you cannot allow your past to determine your future. Regardless of what your parents did, you cannot let your past, whatever happened to you, determine the rest of your life. You can't do that. You have to get out there and make an effort to have a good life.
I mean, and that entails getting the academic vocational education. And yes, it's going to be difficult. Yes, it's going to be a problem. Yes, your medical conditions will interfere with it. But you can do it. I mean, the GI Bill has worked very well since World War II here in Illinois. Anybody that's graduated from high school and went in the military has 4 full free years of schooling. And each time you go back, you get more. So, I mean, you know, there's no reason not to excel. But then at the same time, in what we're calling for, again, we've called for over and over again, and now it's hit me in between the eyes because I can't get it, is that medical care to ensure that you're function is
exactly
optimal. We can't cure it, but we can sure optimize remaining function.
You're right. I mean, pushing yourself, that's part of it. Eating right, living right, not doing certain things and picking up negative habits and things, it's going to hinder you somewhere in life. So you try to do everything you can do, but the government needs a step in there because you're dealing with moral injury, you're dealing with maybe post-trauma, you're dealing with physical injury. And if they don't do their job, it's hard to do your job. You know, it's you want me to stay positive and keep moving on, but I'm missing a leg or I'm missing an arm or, I'm hurting and I can't get my pain meds. I don't want to study when I can't get my pain meds. And so it has to be on both sides of that and from a lot of different fronts. But we can stay away from certain things and make our life. Someone said one time, Doug, we choose the way we die by the way we live many times. And sometimes we do.
When your unit got wiped out in Vietnam on the ridge, what did you feel or what did you want to do? I mean, you were very young and your hopes, your dreams, your friends were wiped out.
Right.
What did that feel like? I mean, I've never really asked you that question. What did you want to do next? Did you want to live? Did you want to thrive? Did you want to forget?
All the above. I think I was desensitized. I think when I came back, I was numb. I could not feel nothing. And so I got in problems with that. I couldn't feel love. I couldn't feel hate. I couldn't feel, my brain more or less shut down. And I really want to be with my dead friends more than I did my live ones. You always eulogize your dead ones. You know, it's like, oh, man, he was the greatest guy. He was the one that come. You know, yesterday you didn't like the guy, and today you're eulogizing him, that kind of thing. It always works that way. But, you know, when you've gone through a lot of trauma, which I look at these kids, Doug, and I'm thinking, good gracious, how in the world are they going to deal with? Because I never saw what they saw. I've never done what they've done. Nobody ever did to me what they have done to them. I know I talked to an old lady that she was raped, and she was crying about it. And then she started laughing. She said, you know, it's kind of funny. It has nothing to do with what I was just telling you. But she said the other night my husband came and got in bed just like 20 or 30 years later after the rape. But she said he was eating bologna, and I wanted to punch him in the face. I wanted to rip his head off. She went off on him. And she was telling me, she said, I don't know why it's like that. Well, come to find out, the guy raping her had been eating bologna 30 years before. Bologna is a trigger that causes that woman, her brain remembers that trauma through that bologna, and she goes off on him. Well, that's never going to go away. What you have to do is realize what the problem is and then begin to look for coping mechanisms to make her husband go brush his teeth before he gets to bed or something. I don't know what it is, but you've got to find realistic coping mechanism to help you live in life because you're never going to get past it. It will be there as long as they make bologna, and you're going to smell it, you know, that kind of thing. So your situation was has to be recognized, and then you have to look for real possibilities and ask God to help you. Doug, let me say this before we hang up. I said last week or sometime, I said, you know, anybody can count the seeds in an apple, but only God can count the apples in one seed. One tree could live for 100 years, and it will produce over 100,000 apples. In other words, what I was just saying was, God knows everything I'm dealing with, and every pain, and every hurt, and every ache. And if we'll ask him to help us, he will help us with that. He'll give us peace in the midst of a storm. Sometimes he removes the storm. Sometimes he just gives us peace to endure the storm. But God is real, and he's good, and he will reach down. All these hate mongers I was telling about on television, the pulpit of today, they're not talking for God. God is for us. He is for love. He is for peace and goodness. And all this hate mongers mess, man, trash that junk. Get away from it because it will poison you.
Your book, The Neverending War, how can people get a copy of that and review that again?
Okay, it's on you can go to my website, theneverendingwar.com. It's under L.M. Clark. You can also go to Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, all over different places. And, Doug, I just thank you so much for allowing me to try and give a little bit of medicine. Both of us are doing that because there's a lot of hurting people in this world. And I think it's very important what you're doing, Doug, and I'm thanking you to let me be a part of that. That means a great deal.
Well, we got to keep helping, and it's horrific when the problems come back to face that we have to face and everything else. But Dr. Gary Nolan, his documentaries, his most recent two-part report, all the other stuff, your book, Neverending War, the documentaries, Beyond Treason, that George Riley did. I mean, they're all out there. The Doctor, Death and the Dying, D.U. and the Dying Children. I mean, the CBS 60 Minutes we did. But somehow we've got to get the American public to realize the problem and come back and demand a solution. We're out of time. God bless you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.